Today's date is July 2nd, 2025. Sir Roger, would you state your full name, please?
Yes, Roger Charles Redden.
What is your birth date?
June 25th, 1950.
And your present age?
75.
And where are we recording this interview? Where are you?
I'm in Muskogee, Oklahoma.
And where were you born?
Claremore, Oklahoma.
We're here to tell the story about your father, but I want to know your mother's name and her maiden name, where she was born.
Mary Janet Harding, and she was born in Pryor, Oklahoma.
She grew up in that area?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Then your father's name?
Gene Robert Redden.
Now, we're here to tell the story of Mid-America Industrial Park in Pryor, Oklahoma. Now, your father is recognized as the founder of the Mid-America Industrial Park. Let's talk about him. Where was he born, and where did he grow up?
Well, he was born in Sayre, Oklahoma. That was on July 4th, 1919. But he grew up in Roger Mills County, in a little town called Durham. His great-grandfather graded his family from Willow Springs, Missouri in 1900. And they were able to obtain a section of land at Durham, and which is just outside of Cheyenne, Oklahoma. He went to school in Cheyenne. And
can you describe the family? They had that land. Were they a fairly wealthy family?
They raised horses primarily. They sold most of their horses to the U.S. Cavalry, and so they'd have to drive them up to New Mexico and Colorado and that sort of thing. And so they made a pretty good living at that. And then my great-grandfather died in 1916. He was about 65 years old, something like that, 65 or 70. They also raised cotton, and they made money off of that. And then somehow grandfather acquired the cotton gin, so he made money off of that. In turn, he bought the general store in Cheyenne and also the pool hall. Later, he owned two car dealerships, one in Cheyenne and one in Sayre. Yes, at one point, they were quite wealthy. They had acquired more land. I don't know how much more. Then the Depression hit, and just like a lot of people, they bought a lot of stock on margin, you know, and made some pretty good money off of that. But then the margin calls came in, and he virtually lost everything, you know, selling it to pay the margin calls. But one thing he did do was that he financed a lot of the cars that he sold, because they were local businessmen, farmers, and such. And so he carried their notes. When he took bankruptcy, he refused to go after those because he knew the vehicles they owned were important to their business, and that without them, they wouldn't be able to survive. They managed, lost the homestead too, so they had to move into town.
The town was Cheyenne, right?
Yeah, Cheyenne, Oklahoma.
Let's jump ahead. He actually went to college.
Yes. He was able to get enough money to apply to Oklahoma State, and he had enough money to cover his books tuition, but he didn't have money for room and board. He tried to find a job in Stillwater, and after a month, he wasn't able to find any work at all, so he ended up had to disenroll and move back to Cheyenne. It was during that time that he first saw and met Mary Janet and found out where she lived. So that summer, he got a job working for the Oklahoma Highway Department, because they were doing work on Highway 69 around Pryor. So he moved to, he got a little place in Pryor and worked for the Highway Department, and then tried to date her, and her parents didn't like him that much, so that didn't work out too well. But he found out that she was going to apply to Southwestern State College in Weatherford. So he took his money that he'd earned, and he applied there and was able to get in school. And he had enough money to pay for his books and tuition and for about a month of his room and board, but he still needed to get a job. And after looking and finding and not being able to find work, he finally went to the university president, basically told him, said, look, you know, I don't know what you got or the same thing I can do, you know, if there's any job here on campus or whatever. Well, the president looked at me and said, well, you know, we put you on our groundskeeping. That'll pretty much cover your room and board. So he got that job. And then later he was able to get a job as a soda jerk at the local soda fountain there in Weatherford. So he began courting Mary Janet. She was very popular. She was a mezzo soprano on high demand for every function they had at the university sponsored. She would usually sing. She was actually in a church choir, Methodist Church. They dated. Dad joined the Young Democrats in Sayre, and then became an officer in the state association. I successfully ran for president of the Young Democrats.
Let's bring them to 1941 and December 7th, 1941. And that was months before Gene and Mary married, right?
Right.
And then he enlisted in the Navy and he did his basic training. And then after the war, Gene and Mary lived in Cheyenne.
He'd made an appointment with the Government Service Administration and got a job with GSA overseeing what was then North American Rockwell in Tulsa. And that was about 47, I think.
So that was the inland management and assigned to the North American Rockwell Aeronautics Facility, right? Then he heard of an opening at the Army High Explosives Plant. Tell us about that.
That's right, yeah. That's the Oklahoma Ordnance Works Authority plant. You know, part of the Army was operated by DuPont Corporation. Anyway, he heard about that, that they were in the need of a general manager. He went and applied and was hired and went to work there. So they moved to Pryor, and there used to be an area called the Staff House area where all the management people, the supervisors, stuff like that lived. It was like 32 individual homes up on a bluff overlooking what they call the Lower Grand River, which was basically used as an overflow for Grand River Dam. So about a year later, the administrator of the gunpowder plant, as they called it, passed away, and Dad was then appointed as administrator. That was about 48, I think.
Then on June 25th, 1950, the United States entered the Korean conflict to stop communism in the Far East. And so then this meant the munitions plant would be gearing up to support the war effort.
Right. During World War II, when they opened the plant, they employed about 15,000 people. Then as it geared down after World War II and before Korea, then, of course, there was a reduction in force. I don't know how many, but quite a few. I think it just kept enough to maintain operations and fulfill whatever, you know, Army requirements they had, contracts and stuff. Then, of course, the Korean War came, and they had to, gear up again. I don't know how many people they had on staff, but it was quite a few during that time.
Okay, what did they produce there at that place? You say gunpowder place. What was the product?
Well, it'd be high explosives. You know, probably made gunpowder, but, you know, TNT quality, that type of stuff. So, okay. I mean,
and then they sent it to McAllister, and what did McAllister do with it?
Well, I guess they made, as I understand, McAllister manufactured the shells, the artillery shells that the Army used.
Okay. So when the Korean War ended, that ammunition place there at Pryor was shut down.
Yes, primarily it was about probably 1956 that they decided to mothball the facility. They still had some contracts they had to complete, and so it stayed open long enough to do that. And then the Army contracted with a company called National Gibson, which was a manufacturing plant in just outside the gates of the industrial park as caretaker. And then they hired Dad to stay on as administrator to perform the task of, you know, putting inventory in the facility and then eventually, you know, shutting it down completely. By that time, they kept a skeleton maintenance crew, his office staff, which is about four people.